It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this sixth day of April 2022. This is the Horn Head On Dot Live. It is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go. If you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin. If you should happen to pop by the aforementioned chat room about now, you will, of course, be greeted by early arrivers, the early crew, Anatole and Squeaky and Stockton Larry. I, for the time being, am your moderatrix. And, no, that has nothing to do with it. Stop it. Just the moderatrix, that's all. Proper Latin. But probably pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, will be wandering by at some point in time. And, we look forward to his imminent arrival. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. That means thanks go out to our sixth day of the month subscribers. In particular, what that means is we say thank you. We say thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. We say thank you to Bob. Thank you, Bob. And we say thank you to Michael in Madison and to John. Thank you to Don in West Tennistan. Thank you also, and thank you for jumping in last night after the program to our buddy Texas T. So what that means is that the fundraising goal for this evening is down to just $415. $415, and with any luck at all, we'll knock some or all of that. Again, with any luck at all. It is midweek. That means it is, what we have long referred to as Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. For a long time, we looked to the excesses of the religion industry on Wednesdays because, well, Wednesdays, if you're an evangelical Christian, you got to go to church on Wednesday because, there might be some impediments to your salvation that you run into after Sunday and on Monday or Tuesday or maybe Wednesday morning or Wednesday afternoon. You need a little uplift on Wednesday, right? Yeah. So, well, what better time than Prayer Meeting Wednesday? Because I am, after all, Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Naughty Nun, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Robin Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Our worship services have been curtailed by the pandemic. We may start gathering again in our imaginary cathedral of common sense sometime in the near future. The little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men have been working all along, making up prayer meeting Wednesday dinners and sending them out to the shut-ins and whatnot. But not just yet. Well, what I had in mind to get us started, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, is, a Bible story. Yeah. A Bible story. From Little Miss Three Names. Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball. The photo I have of her here, she's wearing this sort of flutter sleeve top, in a black and white motif. She looks like sort of a, I don't know, mariachi Shamu or something. Never mind. That's mean. I should stop being mean. No, not to her. We can be mean. She was at one of those little grunting and barking and hooting fests that go on over the weekend. And it all goes back to the questioning of 3X Marsha during Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation hearing. And when three X Marsha thinking she, with her home ec degree from Mississippi State, that she would really trap the massively more educated, entirely more brilliant Judge Jackson with a question about what, give me the definition of a woman. Yeah. Well. Speaking to the Georgia Republican Assembly, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball said,
I'm going to tell you right now what is a woman. We came from Adam's rib. God created us with his hands. We may be the weaker sex. We are the weaker sex. But we are our partners, our husband's wife.
Well, it didn't take long Well, yes, it is a gendered term. Ron and Raleigh says moderatrix, you say? Isn't that a gendered title? Since you can't say actress, why is it okay to say moderatrix? Seems to be a little inconsistent. Well, it is. Because a girl can change her mind. I did. I like being a moderatrix. Anyway... God, poor Marjorie. She got savaged. Marjorie had also gone on to say that the Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and Bishop Willard Romney were all pro-pedophile because they voted to advance debate on Judge Jackson. Judge Jackson, according to Little Miss Three Names, apparently being a pedophile in her own right. I don't think Margie would fare too well in a set to with Ketanji Brown Jackson. I mean, Judge Jackson might say, look, a solid silver mercury diamond pointed to ground. And Marjorie, being a Republican and an idiot, would probably look to bend over to look, and then she'd hear the tweeting birds and see the stars. Oh, well. But never mind that Marjorie is a permanent... Well, I think the goddess of irony has a little bit of obsessive-compulsive disorder. Because she can't stop grunting about pedophiles because, you know, all that cue ball money she gets from her cue ball following. The goddess is just obsessed with her and keeps tweaking her. on her little pink tomato nose. Because she says that Romney and Murkowski and Collins are pro-pedophile, but she pals around with a guy who used an open Venmo account to pay an underage girl for sexy time. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, isn't it? The goddess is giggling. Well, like I said, she was telling Bible stories to the Georgia Republican Assembly. And among other things, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got wind of it and metaphorically punched her in the face when she said, we are our husbands, wives. AOC said that she incites epic meltdowns and moral panics over simply respecting the rights of people who identify as trans. Adding, because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is orders of magnitude more intelligent than Little Miss Three Names, it threatens the GOP's own definition of a woman as weak male property. I mean, do you think Little Miss Three Names really does think of herself as the chattel property of some dude? How gross. But the Bible story was the part that, this being prayer meeting Wednesday at all, yes, naughty nun, Tom in sunny San Rafael says, or is that none too naughty nun? Oh, honey, not naughty enough these days. Never mind. But she told him that Bible story. We came from Adam's rib. God created us with his hands. Sugar, I know this is going to be a real problem for you, but if you actually believe that, and of course it's not true. I mean, you cannot take the Bible literally unless you're an absolute idiot. There was no Adam. There was no Eve. There was no Garden of Eden. Hell, they didn't even, the people who wrote the book didn't even come up with the story. They got it from, the Sumerians? You know, Hammurabi, Epic of Gilgamesh, Sargon, Ashurbanipal, that lot. But it's a convenient metaphor. But the problem with metaphors is that they beg to be interpreted. So if, in fact, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cuball really believes that God, gave a Mickey Finn to Adam, and while he was snoozing, snatched a rib out of him and fashioned another kind of human, that makes Eve, the first trans girl. Mm-hmm. Because she was made from male material. From male genetic material. Male biology. Now, this is of course, evolutionarily bullshit. Every likelihood is that the female of the species developed first, because if you ever get a look at the X chromosome and the Y chromosome, the Y chromosome is this pathetic little stumpy, stunted, kind of underdeveloped mess. Work in progress. But really, this is the leader of the gender wars in the United States, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cuball, admitting that Eve was the first trans woman. Good God. We need a national movement to demand that, Eve or some sort of interpretation suggesting that Eve was not allowed to swim with the Lilith. Because Lilith is in there, too. Oh, my God. They are so monumentally stupid. Wonder if anybody's pointed that out to Margie. Maybe I need to send a tweet to AOC. Is there something you want to tell us, Marge? Are you questioning, honey? It's okay. Really, it's okay. I'm so sick of this shit. Well, I didn't know that. I've learned something new today. Thank you, Lee in New York. A fact you do not need to know. Obviously, I did. We refer to them as Mercury dimes, but it's a label from the common people. The wings on the side of the Liberty Head dime were intended to express freedom of thought. Funny how the symbology gets so mixed up. But and now you know. The more you know. So, it's not just that. When you start messing around in the gender in the gender stuff, and you also happen to be brutally stupid, you start running into trouble. Because Huffington Post started asking asking Republicans, since they're on this jihad of woman defining, and really there's nothing more ironic, is there, than men running around trying to define women? They're gonna, it's what makes me happy, or something. Huffington Post asked a number of Republican senators to define a woman. 3X Marsha wouldn't answer her own question. Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone, the guy who hauls out his southern foghorn leghorn accent for the rubes back home in Louisiana, Stan John Kennedy, who has a goddamn degree from Oxford, and that means England, not Mozippy Stan, he said, "Well, I don't have anything for you on that." And John Cornholio, the man who brought me the epiphany of white mediocrity privilege, said, "Well, I'm not going to indulge you." But Senator Mike Lee, a man convinced of his own genius, you know, constitutional scholar and all that he is, a woman is an adult female of the human species. Wonder how he refers to, like, female kitty cats and puppy dogs. And yeah, never mind. Come here, girl. Come here, boy. Come on. Can't be doing that. But the real prize goes to the young insurrectionist, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, Stan. He proudly stood up in his maleness and said, "A woman is someone who can give birth to a child. A mother is a woman. Someone who has a uterus is a woman. It doesn't seem that complicated to me." Oops. So the reporter asking Josh Hawley said, a woman who doesn't have a uterus because she's had a hysterectomy or cancer isn't a woman? At which point Hawley, trying to haul himself out of the pit into which he had thrown himself, said, "Well, I mean, a woman has a vagina, right?" Maybe. Maybe not. There are developmental incidents that can happen in utero in which a human female is born without one of those, too. That's why a Soviet doctor back in the 60s, I think, developed a surgical procedure whereby they craft one from the interior lining of the peritoneal tissue and build one for a cis female. It just gets, well, they're so comical. I know a couple of women who have been through hysterectomies, and well, I have a feeling they might take unkindly to little Joshy and his attempt to define them out of existence. Steve in New York, on the other hand, asks, can you define a traitor, a seditionist, a cracker, a constitutional scholar, a fucking ignorant asshole? Well, we can, that's downright Egyptian, Steve. We can just use pictures of Republican senators, and we've got hieroglyphs all over the place. By the way, Lee in New York wants to know, was Adam a woman? Please ask Triple X Marsha if Adam was a woman, because Adam gave birth. No, she wasn't prepared. They didn't prepare her for complex questions like that in the Home Ec department at Mississippi State. Oh, but Lord, they do teach you to make a lane cake. I mean, it originated in Alabama, but they quickly picked it up in Mississippi. Lane cakes is something. Oh, God. Prayer meeting Wednesday, fellowship hall dinner. Maybe the little old blue-haired ladies are going to have to work up a lane cake at some point. You can kind of see this is the kind of day it's going to be. But not entirely. Poor Josh. I'm a father. I have children. I worry about my children. Yeah, we worry about them too, Josh, because you're their daddy. We had the story a little while back of the state senator from Kansas, a guy named Mark Steffen. And this kind of dovetails with something that Lady B pointed out earlier, namely that there was a great big humongous new medical study, double blind testing, appropriate research methodology, and all of that, that shows that ivermectin, you know, horse paste, is that you, Joe Rogan? Ivermectin, horse paste, doesn't do, and this is a complex medical term, diddly shit in terms of treating COVID. The debate is over. Done. Well, over on his personal Facebook page, Mark Steffen said he sent a letter on March 31st, written on Senate chamber letterhead to over 250 Kansas hospitals, clinics, and government agencies. And the letter threatened doctors and hospitals that they'd better, by God, use ivermectin for early treatment of COVID-19, because I done introduced a bill and the Kansas legislature didn't pass it. God, they'd be hilarious if they weren't so damn stupid. They're getting people killed. You know, we passed that million dead Americans mark, and well, doesn't really matter, does it? Oh, well, Scott in San Diego pointing out, Frank Perdue said it best, parts is parts. You know, I always think of that line, parts is parts, every time our little precious 4-year-old granddaughter says, I want some McNuggets. No, parts is parts. There's chicken lips in there. A COVIDiot mask hole spreadneck guy named Peter McCullough, who is a known spreader of COVID disinformation, and a big fan of horse paste and, I don't know, pee drinking, onions in socks, who knows, whatever. He said that the doctors who use horse paste to ineffectively treat people with COVID-19 will no longer have to worry about being interfered with by pharmacists or the Board of Healing Arts. And and how he threatened the docs and the hospitals was to say that the legal community, that's a bunch of pettifoggers who studied law at the Google College of Law, failure to prescribe ivermectin to be wanton disregard. One doctor got it, a family physician from Dodge City, Kansas, Jeremy Presley. He said, I interpret it as the intent being, this is the word and you will follow it. This is me warning you. I mean, it's worded in a mild or threatening manner. Basically, it blatantly tells us you'll be guilty of malpractice by not providing this care. And it all came across as a real threat, he continued, Dr. Presley. It's telling us this is the law, and here's your expectation, and you'll do this, or you'll be held accountable for it. So not something I want to hear from an elected official. And you know, this Senator Stephan guy, the bill didn't even pass. And in point of fact, when you've got peer-reviewed studies that show that something doesn't work, well, what you're dealing with in a medical malpractice case in most jurisdictions is something called a breach of the standard of care. When a physician does or does not do that thing which a reasonably prudent physician in the same or similar circumstances would have done or not done. And that constitutes the breach of the standard of care, which leads to the question of medical negligence. But in Kansas, well, I mean, here's the question. With a letter threatening hospitals and doctors, telling them they have to prescribe horse paste. One, let's find out if he's got stock in horse paste, the horse paste company in his portfolio. One, that would be self-dealing. But two, in doing this, isn't he engaging in the unauthorized practice of medicine? Maybe even, depending on what his training is, maybe isn't he possibly also participating, engaging in the unauthorized practice of law? Might the Kansas Board of Medicine or the Board of the State Bar be interested in something like that? Well, probably not, because, of course, IOKIYAR. Oh, let's check in with the January 6th insurrection and developments or vague attempts to impose some sort of legal consequences for it. And, of course, this has a West Virginia angle, so it was catnip to me. 29-year-old Jeffrey Finley entered a guilty plea today to having illegally entered the Capitol grounds. He is, like I said, from West Virginia. But he's not just from West Virginia. He's the leader of the West Virginia chapter of the Proud Boys. Yeah, by entering his plea, he's going to face up to a whole year in prison. According to CNN, according to the plea agreement read in court, Finley was among the first group to breach the Capitol grounds. Though Finley was not charged with other members of the Proud Boys, prosecutors say he was photographed with some of the group's leaders marching on the grounds. He also wore an earpiece during the riot. Prosecutors have alleged that Proud Boys members used radios and some wore earpieces to communicate on January 6th, and Finley took part in Telegram message channels that prosecutors have relied upon in making their cases. Didn't take long for young Jeffrey Finley to realize he'd fucked up. Shortly after his participation in the assault on constitutional governance and the seat thereof in the United States, he got busy on social media deleting photographs and videos and trying to delete messages with other Proud Boys there on January 6th and then told other members, hey, y'all got to do this too. No talks about D.C. Hold the phone. How is it that this little creep is being allowed to only plead to one misdemeanor? That's some serious, seems to me, obstruction of justice there. And the conspiracy to commit same. Remember, under most forms of conspiracy law, all you have to have is an agreement among two or more people to do an illegal thing, and then if even one of them takes a substantial step toward in furtherance of the conspiracy, bang. Liability attaches. Well, Finley himself took the substantial step. But, well, maybe that was too much work. So, you know, he'll probably get a whopper and a trip to be fingerprinted and photographed and told to go and sin no more. Yeah, United States of America versus Jeffrey Finley. Charged with knowingly entering and remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority and engage in disorderly or disruptive conduct in any restricted buildings or grounds. And also charged with engaging in disorderly conduct in any of the Capitol buildings. And he's going to walk on a one-count plea. I don't know about you, but I'm really inspired. My God, Merrick Garland is reaching the long arm of the law out to really, really... No. I don't think I've got the heart for the sarcasm. Oh, well. Why not? It is more than a little bit disappointing. Oh, but hey, here's something interesting. Alex Jones finally showed up to be questioned in deposition by a lawyer for the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre. They're suing Alex Jones because of the vicious hit job he did on them, claiming that the children, their beloved children who were slaughtered that day, weren't real. Of course, his vicious campaign against these grieving families led to horrifying results with the victims being accosted anywhere and everywhere by people who bought into Alex Jones's bullshit. And Connecticut Judge Barbara Bellis had held held Alex Jones in contempt because, among other things, he said, "I'm too sick to come and testify." But then went on the air and did his filthy little show the same day. And in classic right-wing fashion, he, of course, has decided to pogo stick up onto the cross. And absolutely went cuckoo bird bananas over the idea of having to be deposed.
Alex Jones here on April 5th, 2022. I flew into Connecticut yesterday afternoon, and I sat for 10 hours with Chris Matty, the former federal prosecutor here in Connecticut from Koskoff. And it was just next level, like a hallucination or something. They start out with demon.
You know, somehow or another, I get the idea that most everything in Alex Jones's life is like a hallucination.
Demonizing me, that I believe in a new world order and a global government.
They demonized him because he's the victim.
And, of course, just last week, the Davos group met and announced world government planetary control.
And the title of this session.
Oh, God. Man needs help. I shouldn't laugh. Here he is complaining about being deposed for his own actions, his own intentional actions. And he can't resist talking about Davos. Maybe there'll be some talk about the Illuminati or some such. Who knows?
With this lawsuit, they're going to outlaw questioning big events like WMDs in Iraq or Jussie Smollett or any of these things that have happened.
Big events like WMD in Iraq or Jussie Smollett. Because I know when I think about the fraud that led up to the bloody and illegal attack on the innocent people of Iraq, the next thing that comes to mind is Jussie Smollett. You? Yeah, thought so. My word. And because Alex Jones is being called to account for tormenting, suffering, grieving parents and accusing them of lying about the deaths of their own children, we're not going to be able to question lies ginned up to create casus belli that result in the deaths of a million innocent Iraqi civilians. I feel confident in saying that Alex Jones was probably not out there marching against the war in 2002, 2003. Really confident.
And that questioning these and looking at the evidence and information is a crime. But here's the big takeaway, and I'll just admit it. I could have done a better job on Sandy Hook. Some of the anomalies that we reported on were not accurate, and I admitted it years before I was sued. But the issue is, this is all about them being holier than thou, and they're the arbiters of truth, and they're the Democrats, and they're the ones that love you, and Alex Jones is the devil, to distract from how the corporate media has been caught lying to people consciously about WMDs, the list, literally, goes on and on. And what's crazy is the public's basically totally woken up, not just here, but around the world, and nothing they're doing is reversing that. But they pick these weird, neurotic subjects like January 6th or Alex Jones and Sandy Hook, and they just obsess.
I had it all figured out with geometric precision. I thought I was mad, but I fooled them with the strawberries. Good God. I could have done a better job on Sandy Hook. Anomalies were not accurate. but the parents of murdered children are, his words, holier than thou. Well, I have a feeling this is going to go to trial. And then a jury of either six or... Darlene, do you know offhand in Connecticut how big is a civil jury? They're going to watch him go cuckoo bananas. And he thinks it's because there's some vast conspiracy to shut him down.
They want to bully all of us. They want to control all of us. These people want to put us in prison for our speech.
And I guess if you're a devotee of Alex Jones, maybe you believe that shit, but it's a civil suit. You can't go to prison for a civil judgment. Now, as OJ proved to us, you can be hounded for every penny that you make if one gets a monetary judgment. And frankly, I hope there a humongous monetary judgment is entered against Alex Jones. And that those very good lawyers make sure that every time he sells another order of chocolate paleo chicken bone beverage, that they just rake it in. Claw it back is the financial term, I think, for the, yeah. And he had his pettifogger there, some dude named Norman Pattis, who said,
I had the impression watching the attack on Mr. Jones that this...
The attack on Mr. Jones! The nerve of saying that when we're talking about the demonization of parents who had to look at their little children torn apart by semi-automatic weapons fire from a gun that is made for war. Thank you, Darlene. Six jurors for civil... at the superior court level. Thank you. Well, that's going to be six people who get to go to the circus for a few days. The attack on Mr. Jones, that this trial will be about something far greater than what happened at Sandy Hook. Well, by definition, it has to be about something more than what happened at Sandy Hook. It's about the sleazy, filthy, conscienceless attacks on these grieving families for nothing more than sickening profits from the people who pay attention and actually think Alex Jones is a truth teller.
The trial's going to be about ordinary people's ability to say, I'm not buying it. I want to raise questions. I want to draw my own conclusions.
Well, look what Lawyer Pattis, he draws that Lawyer Pattis like a gun. Look at what Lawyer Pattis is saying. He's actually saying that some portion of the deadly stupidity that plagued this nation during the pandemic, which, by the way, is still with us, has its roots in shit like this. And garbage like 9/11 truth. And that Alex Jones is kind of a mother of it. And of course, he was right there during all the COVIDiocy as well.
I had to sit for 10 hours of questioning while they attacked me.
This happened yesterday, by the way. And he had to show up because it was the only way that his fines could be returned. He thought that maybe... the long arm of Connecticut law couldn't reach him in Texas. He paid $25,000 in fines for Friday and $50,000 in fines for Monday. The families, because they have competent counsel, didn't say anything about the deposition yesterday. They knew, I'm sure, that all they had to do was remain silent and
feed him rope, and, well, Alex Jones would do the work for him. Imagine accusing them of these grieving parents who have lived with this horror for almost 10 years now. It's just totally insane to sit there and watch this happen, to watch them lick their lips and lick their chops and think we're going to finally shut Alex Jones down. And apparently it did get kind of testy during those 10 hours. Norman Pattis said tempers flared. These families have gotten death threats over what he said. And I guess, I don't know, I guess one of the defenses will be that, he said it happened, y'all. I mean, the little clip that I played for you was just a few seconds of a 16-minute rant. All of which will be, well, usable.
You never wanted InfoWars.
Usable. As statements of party opponents, the hearsay objection won't stand because Alex Jones is a party opponent, and that is defined in most rules of evidence as not being hearsay at all. It's not an exception to the hearsay rule. It isn't hearsay. So, I have no doubt that the law firm has already begun chopping out delicious and tasty little clips for the jury of that very rant. And God knows everything else he's babbled. I don't know when this thing is set for trial. Obviously, they're still in discovery. And I don't think free speech in the United States is going to be impacted by this. Because, among other things, his speech was malicious, willful, malice aforethought. And that kind of stuff's a jury question. I don't think he's going to get bounced on New York Times versus Sullivan or Falwell v. Hustler grounds at the summary judgment phase of the process. And while it will be gratifying, I know for a fact that for those families, a jury could award them every penny that he makes for the rest of his days. And if they could exchange it to have, my God, the Sandy Hook kids would be learning to drive now. They'd be sophomores. They'd be juniors in high school by the time the 10th anniversary rolls around. But it didn't matter to Alex Jones. Their chopped up little bodies didn't matter to Alex Jones. All that mattered to Alex Jones was fleecing the rubes. Hustling some more chocolate chicken bone paleo beverage. Or I don't know, super beets. Because it's a good dollar. Really good dollar. Go away. I mean, it still weirds me out. When I go, I don't know if anybody ever got around to taking it down. But when I go up to the Wiggling Pig, there's a stop sign at the little country road where you turn out onto US 60. And for years, it had, no kidding, an InfoWars bumper sticker on it. Because that kind of lunacy spreads. It's kind of sad that he won't see the inside of a prison. Maybe I'm just vicious that way. I don't know. Oh, wait. We've had a Godzilla from Wasilla sighting. Mussolini. Caribou Barbie. And after what we had yesterday with Tom Headful of Cotton of Arkenstan accusing her, accusing Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson of being a Nazi sympathizer in a party plumb full of them, the Republican Party maggots. Well, I guess it should come as no surprise that Godzilla from Wasilla has entered the fray. That grizzly bear mom. Somebody booked her for on Real Murka's Voice to offer her considered, nay, yea, verily, expert opinion on the qualifications of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. Get the hockey puck.
I don't think she is right for the Supreme Court. She did not have the most basic fundamental answers to the most basic fundamental questions being posed to her of her from those on the Hill. And it kind of shocked me that she seemed so ill-prepared, really, to be able to answer a simple question like, what's a woman? You know, our first, second, third graders can answer that one. And that was, that took me aback. I think that, and along with a lot of other questions that she couldn't answer, took a lot of people back. And I think it's unfortunate that Joe Biden came right out of the chute saying he was going to base his pick on race and on gender. And, you know, that brings back the movement towards freedom and true equality so far back. And it's, you know, it's pretty insulting that he decided to just create those parameters and stick with.
Yeah, those parameters and the movement for real equality got taken back. Mm-hmm. And her expertise is what? I'm pretty sure that she thinks Rita Mandamus is a famous Hispanic actress of a bygone... There, I said actress, Ron. Of a bygone era. You know that Rita Mandamus? She was in the Road Company of West Side Story. Would you like your Sarah Palin word salad tossed at your table, or do you want us just to do it in the kitchen and bring it out in a bowl? Because she's reaching for her words. Yeah, I got to go and talk about that black lady. I mean, a third grader knows what a woman is. Well, you know, generally, Sarah, we don't we don't rely on third graders for expert testimony in courts of law. And I can only guess that she referred to third graders because, well, that's the last time she actually felt smart.
Within that, because you know, not that she's not qualified, but there are so many good qualified constitutionalists out there.
Yeah, because she's not a constitutionalist. She's a pedophile and a Nazi sympathizer. Dear Hay. Wait, that's Wisconsin.
I mean,
she's actually grieving that it wasn't filled by another white mediocrity like Ann's boy Neil or Brat, I guess. And there's something fascinating in all of that. Because even old Balls and Strikes John Roberts is kind of fed up with the right-wing judicial jurisprudential maniacs on his side of the court. A case recently came before the Supreme Court on the emergency docket, which we have taken to referring to as the shadow docket. And it had to do with a Trump-era rule, administrative rule, in which the Maggot administration said, sure, go ahead. Dump all you want. The case is Louisiana versus American Rivers. I've been to an American Rivers Coalition meeting or two. They do good work. And the regulation that the maggots put in place made it easier for states to give away permits as though they were in gumball machines to allow polluters who give not a damn for the harm they do to pump filth into rivers that are navigable. And the case is still pending. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is in the decision process as to whether to grant, to hear the appeal of the order, because the district court had said, And so it went up because these poisoners know why people like Brat and Justice Handmaid and Ann's boy Neil and Slappy and Sammy Bad Breath, Alito Halitosis, get it? They know why they're there. They were crammed onto the court via the Federalist Society to do the bidding of the poisoners. Because job-killing regulations. And the emergency docket, the shadow docket, it used to be that it was used for things that are real, real emergencies. This wasn't. You know, it was the shadow docket that was used to allow Texas's bounty to go forward against people who help women who want to access their constitutional right to manage the workings of their own bodies. Oh, God, we've got to follow up on that, on one of those stories, too. But the Supreme Court has rules for when one uses the emergency docket. In a 5-4 decision, the maggots on the court, of course, decided that it's okay to just pump poison into the into navigable rivers, because who needs who needs clean poison-free rivers anyway? I mean, it's kind of cool when rivers catch fire. I mean, wasn't that awesome when the Cuyahoga River caught fire? I mean, damn. So Justice Kagan wrote, "The applicants here," by applicants she means poisoners, "have not met our standard because they have failed to substantiate their assertions of irreparable harm. By nonetheless granting relief, the court goes astray.
Of course it does. It's being led. It's being led by a couple of credibly accused sexual assaulters. A religious Lulu who calls herself a handmaid. A guy who wanted a black guy to freeze to death in a fucking truck, and another guy who wanted who told cops it's okay to shoot a black kid in the back of the head at 30 feet who's running away and poses no threat to the cops. By nonetheless granting relief, the court goes astray. It provides a stay pending appeal and thus signals its view of the merits, even though the applicants have failed to make the irreparable harm showing we have traditionally required. That renders the court's emergency docket not for emergencies at all. The docket becomes only another place for merits determinations, except made without full briefing and argument. Well, you can't expect big toxic polluters to spend money on lawyers who write briefs and make arguments. I mean, and then the court gets to actually rule on the evidence. Evidence? We don't need no stinking evidence. Hell no. But there was a wrinkle in this case. As usual, Breyer and Kagan and Sotomayor signed off on the dissent. History will recognize them as having been consistently correct in their rulings, because the history of the Supreme Court is, by and large, a history of fucking up. But like I said, a weird thing happened. Old Balls and Strikes himself, the blue-eyed guy with the 30-mile stare, John Roberts, sided with Kagan and Sotomayor and Breyer. He agreed with that language that I just read a few minutes ago. How do you like that? There'll be pigs in the treetops by morning. They are so awful and so odious and so abusive of the Supreme Court's own precedents and procedures that even old Balls and Strikes, as hardcore a Republican ideologue as the court has ever seen, is hanging out with Sotomayor and Kagan and Breyer. And that is a measure of fucked upery. And it's surprising. But meanwhile, the polluters just keep dumping their filth. And there is not a navigable stream in the United States that is immune to their depredations. Not a navigable stream in the United States that some poisoner, some corporate poisoner, doesn't want to dump in. Along with pigs, Jeremy in Vermont notes, looks like I'll be looking for 50-cent pieces to fly out of my ass, too. But, you know, it kind of goes to show some interesting things could transpire. Now, Ketanji Brown Jackson is not going to go on the... Even if she's confirmed tomorrow, she's not going on the court anytime soon, because Justice Breyer said he would serve out the end of this term of the Supreme Court. So once she's confirmed, she doesn't get to walk up to up onto Capitol Hill, walk over to the Supreme Court building and say, "I brought my robe." She's got to cool her heels for 3 months until Breyer steps down. And it'll still be mostly a 6-3 majority. But in close cases, it is conceivable that old Balls and Strikes, if he joins with the other three, if... perhaps Jesus was to call Slappy home to his eternal reward. Or maybe, if it gets bad enough, and if we vote hard enough, and if we keep the majority in the House and maybe build on it in the Senate, maybe Slappy could be impeached because of Jenny, who just may be implicated in the grand jury investigation of January 6th. Possible? Damn, one sure hopes. So there's the filibuster for this prayer meeting Wednesday. We got $415 to raise to stay even. We need $115 to pay to cover yesterday, and $300 today. That's $415. Any help is good help, and so deeply appreciated. Oh, I know, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut talking about Godzilla from Wasilla. How I miss that stupid woman's inflections and word salad verbiage. Verbiage. There's a sort of double W.C. Fields flavor to it, verbiage. As a matter of fact, Darlene says, I think that was the first time I ever contacted you via email on your program, and you read my email on air. I mentioned that chopper riding wolf and moose killing caribou Barbie's inflections.
Inflections.
No, that's a bit of Australia. Now you got me thinking about it. I can't do it, Darlene. You know how to say it like her.
Great to know she is. Still dumb as fuck.
And she can probably still see Russia from her house. And Putin's head rising above the horizon. LOL. God, thank you, Darlene. Thank you. Pale and Skill, Lee in New York, says, instead of a hard question about gender, maybe the question should have been easy. You know, like, what news sources do you read? Oh, blast from the past. Y'all, let's run over and check in on the stress line, see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Considering that I had some man digging in my mouth with sharp tools yesterday, I'm doing pretty great.
Well, you sound like you didn't.
And you know, get into grad school and all that, you know. Well, I'm chilling. I am straight up chilling.
Everything's coming up roses.
That part. But, no, I just got off the phone after being on hold for over an hour with the company, the same company that I received my cap and gown from is also the same company that I was getting my announcements from, that I should have had, this should have been delivered pretty much the same time as the cap and gown last month. So I tried to get through yesterday on hold for an hour, had to give up because I had something to do. So I tried it again today. This time I was on hold for an hour and 20 minutes, but I actually got through. And I'm like, so y'all, you know, what's happening with my announcements that I was supposed to get, you know, like last month sometime? Oh, we're having supply chain issues. I said, oh, really? Well, that's too bad, but why in the heck didn't I get an email stating to the effect that there's a delay on my announcements that should have been in the mail already? And, you know, oops. And I said, look, I understand, you know, I understand about supply chain issues. You can't have lived through the last 2 years without understanding about supply chain issues. Because we use a special paper. And I said, y'all, there's no other paper y'all could have used? Seriously? I said, so I need to know how you're going to make this right. Because we can't cancel the order. I said, well, you may not be able to, but I know for a fact that you guys will be taking money off. You will be discounting my, refunding some of my payment because, you know, First of all, oh, and I pay for express shipping as well.
And, you know, pardon me here, but those announcements aren't much good to you if you can't get them to the people you want to send them to, you know, before the event itself.
That part. That part. But what annoys me the most is the, you know, no communication. I said, you know, besides the fact, you know, I've been on hold because I love how they said, well, you know, go ahead and email or contact us by phone. You know, I said, if these motherfuckers ain't answering the phone, do you think I'm really going to get an email answer in a timely fashion? Because when you go out, you can check the status of your order online. And when I checked it yesterday, that's what prompted the phone call. It shows cap and gown, tablet, delivered. And on my, for my announcements, it just says processing, which means processing means they haven't even, have they started it yet? Or is it even in the queue to be started? Whatever. It's just saying processing. Not, oh, your shit is done, is on its way. No. Processing.
No, that's the verbal equivalent of watching the old Microsoft hourglass spin and spin.
Right.
And
or the spin. tennis ball of death on a Mac. Not the tennis ball, the beach ball of death on a mat. Just watching this fucker spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. Oh shit, I just put $60 to put gas in my car, and that's at $3.39 a gallon. So how much would it have been? Let's see. I put 18 gallons of gas in my car, and right now gas out here for me is $5.99 a gallon. Regular gas, but
wow.
Anyway. So that part. So she's like, well, ma'am, I promise I'll get back to you tomorrow, or no later than tomorrow, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, all right, we'll see.
You know you're not going to hear from her. You know you're not going to hear from her tomorrow, right?
Oh, no. Oh, I know. And it's my fault for not getting her email address, but that's okay. I'll just call. Tomorrow's Thursday. If I don't hear from her tomorrow, or email tomorrow, then I will be on the phone bright and early Friday morning. Because they're on the East Coast. I think they're in New York. Not sure exactly where they are on the East Coast, but they are on the East Coast because they're closed at 5 o'clock. Easter Standard Time, and they open at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning my time. I mean, yeah, so they open at 5 o'clock in the morning my time and close at 2 o'clock in the afternoon my time. Why would you? Okay, you're an idiot. This guy is walking down the street, has this little fake dog, not on a leash.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not
and
the
if
idiot.
I hadn't seen it, it's like, and if I hadn't seen him and caught the dog out of the corner of my eye, I would have hit the dog. Because the dog's not on the leash. And it's an itty-bitty dog. The stupid is strong in this one. But here, happy news. So I went today and I found an embroiderer out here in the valley who is going to do the personalized embroidery on my kente cloth stole. So on one side it's going to say Black Girl Magic. On the other side it's going to say Black Lives Matter. And it's going to have my name, Jason Shell Quarter, Lee Sun 2022. And then on the other side it's going to have Bachelor of Arts. I've kind of studied. I know I drive you crazy when I talk like that, but it's just so much fun.
Oh, no, I think it's adorable.
You know? So, and I, you know, it was kind of pricey, But it's going to be ready on Tuesday.
So you'll have that before you have your announcements?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, look, all kidding aside, do you need to check with another print shop?
Well, see, that's the thing, because this is what is angering me, because they have no idea when they're going to happen, you know. And they said, well, some of them have been finished. I said, well, that's really all sweat, great and slow for the people that have been finished, but where's my shit?
So was this outfit recommended by the university?
Hunty, they came to campus. I think I told you about Grad Fest. This is Herf Jones. I don't know if they took over Jostens or if Jostens are still there or what have you, but this is Herf Jones. And, you know, my ring, I'm not tripping on because I knew it was going to take the ring. I won't get the ring until maybe June, maybe late May, but definitely not at the earliest June. But I knew this. The ring is not going to come until after I graduate. Not tripping on my class ring. And it is good. It's gorgeous. It's going to be, I can't wait to see it. I mean, I saw it, sent you the picture of it. But, you know, like I said, I picture it in red. And that, because I think that one's like some kind of a pink color. And you know how I feel about pink. But anywho.
Quit hating on pink.
So,
quit hating on pink.
I'm not hating on pink. Pink is a perfectly lovely color for some people. And I, you know, as much as I bitch about pink, I look great in pink. It's just not a color that I wear. It's too, what's the word? Girly. Yeah, that's it.
I didn't go there. I was just waiting for it.
I know. It's just, you know, it's not my jam. But I did wear a pink shirt blouse the other day, and I got a lot of compliments on it. As a matter of fact, when I told my mother I was wearing a pink blouse, she's like, you lie. She knows how I feel about pink. It's not like, oh, pink. Nah. I have never been that girl. Even though, yes, I wore dusty rose from my prom dress, and the only reason why it wound up being pink is if you remember the bottom of it, at this, the material that I found for the bottom, for the skirt of my dress, was so damn pretty, and it was the material that I was looking for, and plus it was, you know, summer slash, you know, late spring, early, no, summer, the summer solstice wedding. So I had to wear something, you know, bright and airy and stuff like that. So I chose pink. And I thought, you know what, Robin? I don't think I've worn pink since. See, Jed and I got married June 21st, 2014. So I hadn't worn anything pink in 8 years until two Sundays ago when I wore that pink blouse. And again, it's like a hate on pink. I rush out and go, ooh, I'm going to wear pink. So our girl, Sarah Palin is talking shit. Supreme Court Justice, let me say it. Supreme Court Justice nominee. Ketanji Jackson. Why do I get her names mixed up? Ketanji Jackson Brown. Or is it Brown Jackson?
Brown Jackson. You can, okay. So just tell yourself, she never sang Running on Empty.
Okay. Thank you. Got you. Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. So, I just, these people.
Oh, wait, better yet. Because I think her husband is a physician. And so she never sang Doctor My Eyes. So she's not Jackson Brown.
Okay. Now you're going way off. You're lucky that I got a couple, one of the references, because I'm not like, you know, I'm not a music person. And Jackson Brown is not like, woo! Okay, so check this out. I'm about to turn, I'm in Windsor Hills, because I'm about to go to this African clothing store to see if there's something I could get for, because, you know, I'm going to Vegas next weekend to do pictures, and thank God my face will not be swollen as a result of the dental work. But there's a restaurant called Jerusalem Chicken, Palestinian Chicken Eatery. And if I were hungry, I would go check it out, but I'm not hungry.
It sounds intriguing.
I had a pretty. It sounds very intriguing. So how did the debate, or the, so what was going on today? Because you said that they were still going to be talking shit today. Anything that you can talk about,
frankly,
without slashing your wrist or anything like that, or
frankly, I got distracted, and okay. So you know. Let's see. I mean, let me just check here and see if they're up to anything right now. Ah, we can check in with Chris Coons of Delaware. Which means he will be sane and rational. Which means there's a cuckoo bananas nut job waiting in the wings.
To know that a person of this skill, of this background, of this sense of judicial temperament, who endured a grilling that was at times tantamount to harassment by other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and demonstrated her grace, her courage, and her integrity under sustained fire. I very much look forward to the votes we will take in this chamber later this week, and I will be honored to vote to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to be the next Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Thank you, Mr. President.
President.
Senator from Rhode Island.
Mr. President, I rise with my increasingly battered poster to call on this body, and in particular on corporate America, to wake up to the threat of climate change. Just this week, the IPCC report came out saying that we are now at the do-or-die, last-chance moment. The other interesting thing about that IPCC report was that it, for the first time, focused on the role of malicious fossil fuel political influence in preventing the solution. Political influence is actually contributing to the climate change problem, and it's the scientists who are now pointing this out. Well, one of the worst expositors of that political influence, the monster in the middle of that political influence campaign here in the United States, is the United States Chamber of Commerce. And I want to talk about them in a minute, but first let's do just a quick recap, because we've known about climate change for a long time. Scientists knew about the greenhouse effect back when Abraham Lincoln was riding around Washington in his top hat. In the 1950s, the oil industry began research on the effects of greenhouse gas pollution. In 1977, nearly a half century ago, Exxon's top scientist warned management of what he called general scientific agreement. Half a century ago, mind you, general scientific agreement that the most likely manner in which mankind is influencing the global climate is through carbon dioxide release from the burning of fossil fuels, end quote. a Republican-led committee led by my predecessor, John Chafee, held a Senate hearing on climate change in 1986. And in 1989, the Chamber of Commerce, one of the most influential forces in Washington, and now one of the biggest lobbyists for fossil fuel interests, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce issued a report for business leaders about the threat of climate change. We've dug out that report because they entered it into the record in a House proceeding later that day. And here's what that report said. I'll quote at some length. There is qualitative agreement among prognosticators that sea levels will rise, wetlands will flood, salt water will infuse freshwater supplies, and there will be changes in the distribution of tree and crop species and agricultural productivity. A significant rise in sea levels will flood now inhabitable land in some countries. These same actions will affect wetlands, and it may not be possible to protect both coastal and wetland areas. Georgia, very susceptible to this, as the presiding officer knows. Flooding will intrude into water supplies, such as coastal cities, e.g. Miami and New Orleans. Changes in temperature patterns will affect natural ecosystems by altering the distributions of species and affecting forestry and silviculture. Croplands will change. The stress will depend on changes in precipitation patterns. Global warming will affect snowfall patterns, hence melt, and affect water supplies. Most of California's water supplies are from snow melt. And if snow is reduced to rain or melts quickly during the winter, water supplies in the summer will be less than now. Does any of that sound familiar? Of course. It is what we are looking at around us now, and it's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce predicted in 1989. Knowing that, what did the Chamber do? I'll tell you what the Chamber did. Over the past two decades, every time Congress took up good climate bills, the Chamber conspired to kill them. The reason is pretty simple. The Chamber serves as the arm of the fossil fuel industry. It takes its money, and it does its dirty work. A couple of years ago, a witness at our special committee on the climate crisis explained how big trade groups like the Chamber, and I quote, adopt the lowest common denominator positions on climate of their most oppositional members. Fossil fuel pays the Chamber to kill anything that threatens what the IMF estimates is an over $600 billion annual subsidy for fossil fuel in the United States. On climate, it's not the Chamber of Commerce, it's the United States Chamber of Carbon. Here are some of the corpses in the Chamber's legislative graveyard. In 2005, the Chamber opposed bipartisan cap and trade legislation. It issued a key vote alert, a signal that whoever voted in favor...
Well, apparently we're just kind of mixing it up as we go along. Those are badly needed remarks, but maybe this is that part of the Senate session where folks can talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Right. These people.
Maybe the United States Chamber of Carbon. Yeah, the United States Chamber of Carbon. That's clever.
That was good. That was almost restaurant quality. That was good.
I mean, it's. There was a certain relevance to what he's talking about there because he was talking about, you know, runoff, you know. Can't protect wetlands, can't protect coastal areas. Well, one of the most endangered areas of the United States is, of course, the portion of Louisiana that's down at the mouth of the Mississippi River. It is literally disappearing. because of sea level rise and climate change. And and yet it's rivers like the Mississippi that the Supreme Court, in that story I was talking about before you came on, just blithely said, yeah, sure, dump some more poison in it. What the hell? Yeah, who gives a shit?
Exactly.
And, of course, we know who suffers the most in these instances. Because the CEOs and the billionaires do not build their houses on tidal flats.
Nope.
They buy 50,000 acre ranches in Wyoming or Montana like RuPaul. That still pisses me off, by the way.
What about RuPaul? I mean, I know that
he leases he and his partner lease their land in I think Wyoming, and they've got tens of thousands of acres for fracking.
Oh, God. Garbage human being.
Yeah, for once, it's not about gender. But it kind of proves that, you know, once you get filthy rich, you do filthy rich things.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
And it's a ranch, and they get tax breaks for it being a ranch.
The ranch.
Rancher RuPaul.
Oh, God. How much money is enough? I mean, the radio station that I call it out here, KBLA. I don't call in, as often as I call you, but today, Dominique DePrima, I told you that her father was Amiri Baraka.
Right, yeah.
And so it was so, because I've been following her for years. She's on another radio station, and her show was on for like at 4:30 in the morning, and it was basically going off when I would be waking up. So when I found her on KBLA, she does the morning drive time from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. And I called it, excited. But anyway, and then when I finally actually met her at the brunch, the KBLA Women's Listeners brunch the Sunday before last, this past Sunday. And so she's like, she has like pretty much like an open mic kind of thing on her show. And she's like, call in if you have anything to, talk about. If you have anything to celebrate. And so I called in, and she's like, she didn't realize it was me. She just said, Tracy. And I told her, I'm like, it was so finally great to finally put a face to her voice. She's like, oh my God, it was this Tracy. I'm like, yeah. So we talked, and, because she was talking about how black women are treated, are being treated. When Stacey Abrams went against, that asshole in Georgia, they tried, when they were talking shit about her, how can she, she's been dead and blah, blah, blah. And how can she, if she can't manage her own finances, how can she be the governor? Just bullshit. Now, because when she had like a net worth of like $100,000 back then, I wouldn't be sneezing at. But now she has a net worth of $3 million. So now she's out, she has too much money now, Robin. So now she's out of touch with the people.
Right.
And about, how they were coming after Patrice Cullors from, Black Lives Matter, because they're trying to say, mismanagement of funds. No. Being very transparent, Patrice Cullors is a novelist, okay? I mean, she's a writer. She's written two books. She has production deals with Netflix and all this. And she bought property, I think out here, out in L.A., but it's not just for her. It's for artists to come and, work and, create content and blah, blah, blah. But, we can't own anything. Because if we own something, especially when it's black women, it's suspect. Because you know, the latest right-wing bullshit about her is, about her, I mean, Patrice Cullors, because Amazon stopped allowing money from, you know, Smile, Amazon Smile, to go to Black Lives Matter. And, of course, the right-wing media picked it up and says, booga, 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 mismanagement of funds, Black Lives Matter, blah, blah, blah. Patrice Cullors is embezzling funds to maintain a lavish lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. But here's the deal. That's not true. What happened is some of the Black Lives Matter chapters that were getting money failed to file their proper paperwork. Because it's akin to, you know, like when you were in college and you had to deal with financial aid, and no matter how many times you submitted a form, there was always that one damn form that you didn't submit, or something, or paper, or something. There's no dares there. There's no intent. It's just oversight. But because there's people that look like me, and by me, by, you know, not only by ethnicity, but and definitely by gender, and, you know, sexual orientation, because most of the women who are part of, or in positions of, you know, that they come after in Black Lives Matter are queer women, queer Black women. So you know they're going to try to do a hatchet job. See, this is the thing about
it requires no prophetic skill to know that that's going to happen.
Right. And also, you know, do your own fucking research. Because, of course, when that story hit, you know, the media, I get all these calls and emails because, of course, you know, you're black. Well, of course, I'm a Black Lives Matter supporter. And in some couple of, well, here, see, and I'm like, did you do your research? Did you see what is really going on before you jump to the conclusion? You're ready to jump to the conclusion that Patrice Cullors is doing something wrong. Why is that? You know, because I don't remember, you know, the Red Cross or any of the Red Cross or the, you know, the breast cancer, Susan Corman, breast cancer, you know, people and all. I don't know if they get the same scrutiny. Hell, fuck, the Trump Foundation or whoever, they are under criminal investigation. Have there been indictments or is it still investigation?
Investigation.
Okay, no indictments. But still, criminal investigation. And how dare, and see, here's another thing. Don't get me started about motherfucking Amazon. These motherfuckers, how much more money that he makes because of COVID? I don't know, he doubled his fortune?
Jeff Bezos, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, and his dick rocket.
And his dick rocket? Flaccid. Has the nerve to go up on their pricing for Amazon Prime? Really? Because I'm old enough to remember when Amazon Prime was $59 a year. Robin, don't you remember that?
I do.
And the only reason why I haven't canceled Amazon Prime is because I get it at the student rate, which is basically the rate it used to be back in the day. So I got it for two more years, the student rate, Robin. I got it for two more years, and I decide to, you know, just become a lifelong student in this day.
There are worse things to be in life.
You know, stay a student until I get this, until the senior citizen discount kicks in.
Hell, I think you, well, don't you 70. Get this, doesn't the senior citizen discount kick in at 50?
Some places is 50. No, well, out here it's like at the youngest is 55. Now, AARP, you can join at 50. And if you have your AARP card and use it at certain different establishments, then you get whatever the agreed upon discount, city discount rate is. But if you're not a member of AARP, then typically it's 55 into 60 before the senior citizens. Because I bought tickets, Dan and I, to go to the movies the other day, and senior discount was 60 years old. So I got 4 more years before I get the senior discount. Ooh, you will be
shut
getting
up.
Your
no,
senior
stop,
discount.
Stop, stop. No. The beautiful thing about hormone the beautiful thing about hormone replacement therapy is it makes you feel like the years have fallen away, so I don't get offered the senior discount, and I don't take it.
That wasn't a laugh more so than a cackle, what I just said. I'm sorry. Really, embrace that age. Shit. No, you know, the fact that I'll be 56 in July, I have no idea who this person is. So they will be getting sent to voicemail. They're not in my contact list, so I won't be answering the phone. Girl, embrace that age. I'm not being offered a senior discount, so I don't want to take it. Really? Did you really? Really?
You got to remember, I'm running around with a Tinkerbell tattoo on my leg.
And so? How old is Tinkerbell? Isn't that bitch at least 100?
Oh, Tinkerbell's older than me by a long shot.
Okay, so...
Lie, you little wooden bastard, lie! I still get a laugh out of that. Oh, God.
That is hilarious.
You mentioned Amiri Baraka. I was I had to make a quick run last night, I actually heard Amiri Baraka mentioned on Fresh Air. Somebody Terry Gross didn't come into work again, so they had to get somebody else to interview a poet. She's a Vietnamese immigrant, and I looked her up later, and her last name was, I think, Vuong. She's brilliant. Oh, my God. Tremendous poetry. But they asked her who she read, and she said, the question was like, you've been compared to Gerard Manley Hopkins and Emily Dickinson. And she said, oh, yeah, I read them. And she said, but I also read Homer. And then she said, and Amiri Baraka.
Wow.
And if you go to like poemhunter.com and look him up, guy was masterful with words.
Oh, yeah. And that's what it, so apparently, he didn't call the highest court in the land the Supreme Court. He called it the Extreme Court.
And it is.
Very extreme.
Well, especially now.
You know, because if he was still around, oh, Jesus, the things that he will be saying right now. Because these people have effectively lost their dance. And the fact that Judge Roberts sided with the liberals, yeah, the world is coming to an end. It's the Holocaust is approaching. Not the Holocaust. The apocalypse. Armageddon. Whatever. The plague, pretty soon there'll be flies and locusts and rivers turning to blood and what else? Frogs?
Frogs and locusts, yes, rivers of blood.
Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Because when you said that this afternoon, I was like, ooh-wee. But wouldn't that be something if Happy Slappy Thomas got impeached? And
girls can dream. Girls can dream.
And Joe Biden replaced the next nominee would be Anita Hill.
Well, I got to thinking about it just because this morning during the opening, you know, when I was watching, I checked in on the Senate, and you know, there was the worst thing to ever creep, crawl, or slither out of Colbert County, Alabama. You know, Moscow Mitch McConnell, Addison. Talking about, you know, we were only mean to that woman because the Democrats made us do it.
It's our fault. You got. It's like, no, don't give us any credit for you guys being, you know, pieces of shit, assholes, bastards. Call you everything but a fucking child of God. Y'all came talk to that all on your own. We had nothing to do with it at all. Don't give us that, you know, don't give us that credit. That's all y'all. All y'all. That part.
Well, they forced me. They forced me to blow up the filibuster. Harry Reid made me do it.
Who are these people?
And I admit that whenever I see that toxic turtle talking, I think about that old joke. The guy who walks by a newsstand every morning, buys a newspaper, picks it up, opens the front page, scans it, and sets it back down and walks on. And this goes on for a while, and finally the guy running the newsstand says, "Hey, mister, you always buy a newspaper from me, and then you look at the front page and you put it back down. What's going on?" He said, "I'm looking to see if somebody's died." He goes, "Yeah, but you never even open the paper to the obituary." He goes, no, this son of a bitch will be on the front page. And I've got a short list of people for that. Henry the K.
Yes.
Count Dicula.
Yeah.
Slappy.
Yeah.
And Addison Mitch, Moscow Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
I know you're
going to let y'all live?
No, I know that's not genteel, but...
Fuck genteel.
God, you just get... You get so sick, Tracy, of watching these serial abusers continue to abuse America and hurt America and damage America.
Mm-hmm.
And you just ask, why?
Why?
I mean, Dick Cheney went years without a fucking pulse. And jumped the line and got some decent person's heart stuck in his body.
Yep.
And then had the nerve to say, "Oh, it's not somebody else's heart. It's my heart now."
Well, on that happy note.
No, I know. I'm just I know. Robin Kincaid.
No.
Little ray of fucking sunshine.
No. I'm going to go look for some really, if I find anything more. You know, I know there's going to be plenty of stuff in there we're fine, but the question would be, A, if this comes in, you know, my size, and B, well, basically A, because if I as much money as I spend at Macy's, I can go ahead and spend money at another black-owned business. So, you know, that part. It's amazing how black people have, okay, I'm not good because I hate that generalization. But it's true. to a large extent, unfortunately, how we have no problems going to like the Koreans or people who in our neighborhoods who own the swap meets and the beauty supply and all that, or Macy's and all that, and never question how much we pay for their services or for their products. But when it's or even when we get bad service, but when it's a black owned business, and it's, you know, the slightest thing wrong. Well, see, that's why I don't support black businesses. Really? But you're going to make these other folks, you got to keep making them rich. Okay.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, before you do go, we just got a note in from Darlene in Connecticut. Well, Stacey Abrams became nationally famous, so of course her book sales would skyrocket, et cetera, and she'd grow her personal income. Good for her. It's a logical progression. I doubt it will change the focus of the brilliant woman to expand voting rights in Georgia. She delivered Georgia to the Democrats. That's a catch-22 for her, because they'll want her to remain right there instead of promoting her to national political roles. The shit that Tracy mentioned, mm-hmm. Stacey, is happening to brown women, too. You know, the ones that the radical right find threatening. Think of AOC posing for the Vogue, was it, magazine cover in a white silk suit that cost several thousands of dollars. She was excoriated for that. It was just for the damn photo shoot. She had to return it.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed, AOC is destined to become a millionaire if she isn't already. That's fine. The question is, will she remember her roots and stay focused on lifting all boats? I think she will. As an interesting side note, Darlene notes, when I typed the word radical into this email, the suggested word to finish the thought that popped, or should I say pooped, up on iPad was left. Seriously? Even fucking autocorrect is Fox so-called newsed. Jesus.
Wow. Jesus fucking. Hi, Darlene. By the way, but you know, this is what we continue with, because, like, you know,
I typed the word radical in a response. You know what I got from this iPad?
What?
Islam.
No. Wow.
Isn't that curious?
So, Darlene gets left and you get Islam. But we won't get radical, you know, right wing or evangelicals.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's geolocated. Maybe since Darlene is in Connecticut, it gives her left. And maybe since I'm in West Virginia, it gives me Islam.
Wow.
Oh, and wow. The white outfit Lee in New York reminds me was for the Met Gala. And yeah, that shit goes back. I mean, you'd think that right wingers would recall that, because after she was done fucking up John McCain's campaign, Godzilla from Wasilla had to give back all the clothing that she'd bought on the Republican dime, because they took her shopping. Oh, but she's never lost contact with her roots.
Mm-mm.
And we still call her Godzilla from Wasilla, even though I think she's long since moved to Arizona, Stan.
Oh, God.
Maybe she's running with Paul Gosar, the demon dentist.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Shame on me.
Well, my darling.
Oh, by the way, Arthur had a funny earlier. Jerusalem chicken, the only kosher chicken you don't have to settle for. Ah.
Ah! Ah! Oh, God.
This quality, wasn't it?
This quality. The food does look good because they have pictures, you know, outside of the restaurant. And it's halal, you know, mm-hmm. so. But it's in a neighborhood that I wouldn't expect Palestinian food. But
I'll bet you the spice. I'll bet you the spice combination is spatial.
Yes.
Yummy.
But I can't eat that kind of stuff. I can't eat nothing like that for at least another. At least until the weekend.
Well, I have to tell you, I picked up another tray of those fabulous butterflied pork chops.
Oh, yes, I heard about those yesterday.
On the 5 for $25, and Annette did them the very same way again. Oh, God, they're candy. I don't ever want a pork chop any other way again. Just magic.
Because I butterflied my, because our chicken, when I get chicken breast out here, I don't know what chicken they got these things from, but my God. So
were the chickens working out or something?
Yeah. Some serious tricks, let me tell you. So, I could easily split one breast into two. Sometimes I could get three fillets off of these breasts. They're so huge. But I just, you know, but I just, I can't wait to eat solid food again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought up the pork chops because, yeah, you can't be fooling with that.
No, it's okay. No, you know,
you need some mashed potatoes with some dirty gravy, and you will be happy.
Mm-hmm. Because Dan was going to make a steak for dinner, so I was going to just take the drippings from that and make some gravy.
There you go. That'd be fabulous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Little red wine to deglaze the pan.
No alcohol.
No, the alcohol burns away in the skillet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You said to deglaze the pan. Okay, right.
Oh, that'd be some kind of good. Maybe, you know, in instances like that, a Cabernet, good beefy cab leaves a lot of flavor there with the beef pan drippings and it all.
Oh.
I'm easily.
Okay, well, now on that note, now I am hungry. God,
yeah, sorry. Yeah, what am I doing? I'm mean. I'm cruel.
No, you're not. No, I mean, come on. I ain't going to bust somebody's groove just because I can't eat solid foods right now.
And how long are you limited?
At least until the weekend. You know, for the first 48 hours, 72, depending on how I feel, but at least until tomorrow.
Get yourself a really kick-ass milkshake somewhere and take the straw out. Use a spoon.
Oh, yeah, no straw.
Straws are the devil.
No straws.
After oral surgery, straws are the devil.
Right, no straws, no spitting. So when I rinse my mouth, I just got a little shit dribble. It's a gorgeous picture of me just having mouthwash and water or whatever dribble out of my mouth because I can't spit. Because I might spit something out.
Yeah, pretty.
So, real lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely. So, for real, no, I'm out. I love you guys.
You have a great afternoon. It's so nice here. There's still light in the sky at 7 o'clock. I love it.
Yeah, it's good. But it's like 95 degrees here. So, it's fucking hot.
It's getting a little miserable. It's getting a little miserable here in the studios. It's all the way up to 77 now. I got to deal with I got to deal with that air conditioner soon.
Get that handle. Get a handle. Handle it.
See you, Tracy.
I love you.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
The one and only Tracy. Sounding great after oral surgery, for God's sakes. I wish I'd sounded that good after mine. Entering the third hour of the program, and it really is kind of miserable in here. I'm schwitzing. Ralph sent along some really horrible news earlier today. One of the better media critics on the left, not movie critic, media critic, you know, because he did such a fantastic job peeling outfits like Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, like a damn grape. Eric Bollert. And in fact, I'm pretty sure back in the early days of the Horn, we probably even had a conversation or two right here on the program. At the age of 57, he has died. And he spent a long time with Media Matters for America, and I used a lot of his content and learned a lot from him. He'd been a senior writer at Salon and at Media Matters, published in Rolling Stone, among other places. And uh, 57 years old, he loved to ride his bike. He lived in New Jersey, Montclair, New Jersey. And he was hit and killed by a New Jersey transit train Monday night. Heartbreaking. He leaves behind a partner and kids. Jane and Ben, his children. He loved basketball and running and biking. And you know, our side can't sustain losses like that. Because our side doesn't have quite the heft and breadth of personnel. The right wing funds right wing media, and so there's just a steady stream of garbage humans that fill up the right-wing mediascape. He was a good guy, smart guy. He had recently started a Substack page called, I think it was called Press Run. And he was hoping to deliver unfiltered, passionate, and proudly progressive critique of the political press in the age of Trump. That's what he said in 2020 when he started Press Run. And he was an author. He wrote Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. That's probably about the time that we had our conversation. He wrote Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. And his voice has been silenced. You know, while Alex Jones runs around barking about, oh, they want to put me in prison. They want to silence, keep us from asking questions about things like Sandy Hook. No one could ever accuse Eric Bollert of just making shit up because he cited and brought receipts. And in the wider world of the tiny wider world of progressive media, it comes as a horrible, horrible shock. Everybody from Hillary Clinton to Media Matters to Salon to Soledad O'Brien to Tamron Hall and Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes said, this is devastating. My God. A real mensch. He will not be replaced. So, I don't do, not even on prayer meeting Wednesdays, I don't do the prayer thing. But my heart just goes out to his wife and family. What a horrible weapon. Never mind. Yeah. So thanks, thanks, Ralphs, for letting me know. Let's check back in on the Senate of the United States for a second. See what that playful gang is up to. God, it sounds like the Starship Enterprise moving through space, doesn't it? I loved hearing the clerk call the roll yesterday. Mr. Langford? Mr. Langford, no.
Mr. President, I am pleased.
The Senator from Delaware.
Mr. President, I'm honored to follow the my colleague from Wisconsin and rise as well regarding the nomination of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to serve as an Associate Justice on the Supreme Court of the United States. As some of you will recall, one of our colleagues from New Jersey, Senator Booker, delivered unusually poignant and unscripted remarks recently in the Senate Judiciary Committee about Judge Jackson's nomination and credentials and character. He moved many of those who were present to tears and spelled out, as only he can, what this nomination means for our nation, in particular for the millions of black Americans who look at Judge Jackson and see their own mothers, their own daughters, their own sisters, and their own friends. Unfazed by the unfair attacks that day on Judge Jackson, our colleague said these words, nobody's going to steal my joy. Mr. President, I second that emotion. This historic moment and this historic nominee brings me a great joy as well. Over the next several minutes, I'm going to talk about Judge Jackson's impeccable qualifications. I want to discuss her sterling record as a public servant, including nearly a decade as a federal judge, that make her supremely qualified to serve on our Supreme Court. And I also want to talk for a bit about the historic nature of this nomination and attempt to put in context just what it means for our nation and for me personally to cast a vote to confirm the first black woman to serve on the Supreme Court. Because today, indeed, it brings a lot of us real joy in this body to know that we have the opportunity, the privilege, to play a small part in Judge Jackson's confirmation. Similar to President Reagan delivering on his promise years ago to nominate the first woman, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, to the Supreme Court, President Biden has delivered on his own promise. He has nominated the first black woman to the highest court in our land, and our nation can be proud of the nominee that we're here to debate and to confirm. Let me begin, however, by taking just a moment to thank Justice Stephen Breyer for his exemplary service to our country. As many of our colleagues know, Justice Breyer was nominated to the Supreme Court by President Clinton in 1994 when I was serving as governor of Delaware, and our presiding officer was an astronaut up in the ether above our planet. And I was, Justice Breyer was confirmed, some will recall, by an overwhelming bipartisan vote, 87 to 9. Justice Breyer served our country with distinction for over six decades, including as a corporal in the Army Reserve, a Federal Circuit Court judge, and for nearly three decades on the bench of the highest court in our land. Justice Breyer is known as a consensus builder on the bench, a trait I've long admired in judges dating back to my time as governor of Delaware, when I had the opportunity to nominate literally dozens of highly qualified individuals to serve on Delaware's highly respected courts. And over the past three decades, Justice Breyer has helped forge principled compromises to protect the constitutional rights of all Americans and to uphold the rule of law. During a small ceremony at the White House in January, when Justice Breyer first announced that he would be retiring, he brought with him a pocket copy of the U.S. Constitution. And in his brief remarks, Justice Breyer reminded us of how Lincoln and Washington and so many other giants of American history have described that document, our Constitution. They described it as an experiment. As Justice Breyer reminded us during the time of Washington and Lincoln, there were plenty of folks who doubted our system of government could ever work. Plenty of folks who said, well, that's a great idea in principle, but it will never work, at least not for long. But as Justice Breyer said that day, he said, it's our job to show them that it does work, and it will continue to work. Mr. President, our Constitution has made possible the greatest experiment in democracy in the history of the world. Over the years, over the past several years, I've spoken any number of times on the Senate floor about the wisdom of the framers of our Constitution. In the hot summer of 1787, they met in Philadelphia, as you recall, and designed an intricate system of checks and balances. Article 1 dealt with the Congress. Article 2 dealt with the executive branch of our government. Article 3, the judiciary. America's longest-running experiments in democracy and our Constitution is more replicated across the globe than any other constitution in the world. But our Constitution has never been perfect. The framers never pretended that it was perfect. This past weekend, I was privileged to give the keynote address during a commissioning ceremony at the Port of Wilmington for a new Virginia-class fast-attack nuclear submarine that bears the name of Delaware, the first naval vessel named after the state of Delaware in over 100 years. At the end of my remarks, I led a crowd of about several thousand people gathered on the Delaware River right beside the submarine and its crew. Among the folks in that crowd included the President of our country, the First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden, who was the sponsor of the boat. And I asked everyone there to stand and hold hands and join me in reciting the preamble to the Constitution, which began something like this. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. It doesn't say a perfect union, rather it says a more perfect union. Why is that? Because our framers understood that this would be an experiment and that it will be up to each generation that follows to decide how this experiment will proceed and if it will succeed. Up to each generation to face those who say that this great experiment in democracy will never work. And it's through our actions on days like this that we show them that it does still work. Judge Jackson's nomination is proof that, indeed, that we have made this nation more perfect over time. And despite our divisions, and we have them, generations of Americans have worked together often across party lines, across state lines, across philosophical lines, to make a nomination like this possible. Like many Americans, I've seen remarkable progress in my own lifetime. While my sister and I were born in a coal mining town in Beckley, West Virginia, where we were raised in Danville, Virginia, right on the North Carolina border, just north of Greensboro. Danville, Virginia was known as the last capital of the Confederacy. Forced to flee Richmond after Union victory started piling up in early 1865, Confederate President Jefferson Davis actually held his cabinet's last meeting, their last meeting, in Danville, where I grew up. He did that a few days before Lee surrendered to Grant at Appomattox. And although it was nearly a century after the Civil War ended when my family moved to Delaware, nearly a century, racial prejudice and discrimination still prevail there. Growing up, my sister and I witnessed racism up close and personal. Every morning, for example, our school bus would take us to an all-white high school 10 miles away from our home. And about half an hour later, another school bus would come by and pick up black students. He'd been waiting along with us and take them to their school, past my school, and another 10 miles to their school, which was not a better school. It was a school that none of us would be especially proud of. If my sister and I went to lunch with my family, we would sit at the lunch counter, but black families were denied service. If we went to the movie theater in Danville, Virginia, we sat on the ground floor. The black patrons had to sit up in the balcony. And that is the America that many of us lived in not all that long ago. Same America that Judge Jackson's parents, Johnny and Ellery Brown, were born into. As America where discrimination on the basis of race was sanctioned by state governments. An America where the judicial doctrine of separate but equal was still enshrined into our laws by the Supreme Court, where arbitrary literacy tests kept black Americans away from poll booths. In America, they treated black Americans like second-class citizens. Despite a civil war, an Emancipation Proclamation, ratification of the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments to our Constitution, it was an America that was far from perfect. But through decades of struggle, and thanks to the heroes of the civil rights movement, our nation began to confront injustice in our communities and inequality in our laws. And thanks to brilliant black lawyers like Thurgood Marshall and Wilmington, Delaware's only Lewis Redding, a number of legal challenges to America's separate but equal classrooms went all the way to the Supreme Court. And perhaps the greatest decision in Supreme Court history, Brown versus Board of Education, declared to the nation that the principle of separate but equal, but separate but equal, could never truly be equal. Brown versus Board of Education did not make our nation perfect, but it was proof. It was proof that when the Supreme Court is at its best, America and our Constitution are at their best. The Supreme Court changed the America my sister and I lived in, that Judge Jackson's parents lived in, for the better. Combined with the landmark civil rights bills of 1960s, including the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, it made the America that Judge Jackson was born into more perfect than it was for the generations that came before her. And I hope and pray that each generation will continue to recognize the uniquely American opportunity that our Constitution affords us, the ability to change our communities and our laws for the better, and take on the tasks themselves. As Judge Jackson stated at her confirmation hearing, her parents taught her that, and I want to quote her. This is a quote from her. Unlike the many barriers that they had to face growing up, my path was clearer, such that if I worked hard and believed in myself in America, I could do anything or be anything I wanted to be. Close quote. And my goodness, did she work hard. The daughter of two graduates of HBCU colleges, Judge Jackson was a star on her high school debate team and was elected mayor of Palmetto Junior High School and student body president of Miami Palmetto Senior High School. Judge Jackson then graduated magna cum laude from Harvard University and cum laude from Harvard Law School, where she was an editor of the Harvard Law Review. She clerked for not one, not two, but three federal judges, including for Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. Judge Jackson could have done anything she wanted with a resume like that, anything, including pursuing any number of well-paying opportunities in the legal profession. Instead, Judge Jackson chose public service, in part because service was instilled in her by her parents, both of whom were public school teachers. And public service, no doubt, runs in her family. For instance, her younger brother felt a similar call to serve. And after graduating from another fine HBCU university, Howard University, right here in Washington, Judge Jackson's brother enlisted in the U.S. Army right after the 9/11 attacks. He was deployed to Iraq, also ended up going to Egypt, and then followed in the footsteps of two of Judge Jackson's uncles and became a Baltimore police officer. Mr. President, when I had the opportunity to meet with Judge Jackson in my office last month, we talked about a wide range of things. Among them, we talked about the diversity of her professional experience, including her time as a public defender, right here in the nation's capital. As most of us know, public defenders work very long hours for very little pay. They represent clients who cannot afford an expensive lawyer, in some cases, cannot afford any lawyer at all. But our system of government affords every person charged with a crime the presumption of innocence, the right to a fair trial, and the right to a competent defense. It's a testament to the character of Judge Jackson that she is so committed to equal justice under the law that she was willing to commit the early stages of her career to this important work. If confirmed, Judge Jackson would be the first Supreme Court justice to have served as a federal public defender in this court's long storied history. and the first with significant criminal defense experience since Justice Marshall. Now, Mr. President, in 2005, I voted to confirm Chief Justice John Roberts to the Supreme Court. Not every Democrat did that. And as you may recall, he was appointed by former President George W. Bush, a Republican. Some of my colleagues might remember before Chief Justice Roberts was ever nominated to a federal judgeship, he worked in a private practice where his firm represented an individual appealing a death penalty conviction for the murder of 8 people. During his 2005 confirmation hearing to the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts was asked about it and stated, and I want to quote him right now. Here's what he said. In representing clients and serving as a lawyer, it's not my job to decide whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. The job of the lawyer is to articulate the legal argument on behalf of the client. Close quote. And Chief Justice Roberts likened this work to John Adams defending British soldiers after the Boston Massacre, saying that Adams, and I want to quote him again, helped show that what our founding fathers were about was defending the rule of law, not undermining it. And that principle, that you don't identify the lawyer with the particular views of the client or the views that the lawyer advances on behalf of the client, is critical to the fair administration of justice. Like Chief Justice Roberts, Judge Jackson has lived up to the values set out over 230 years ago. And in doing so, she has protected and she has defended our Constitution. After her time as a public defender, Judge Jackson served as vice chair of the U.S. Sentencing Commission. She was confirmed unanimously by the United States Senate. Judge Jackson was then nominated to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. She was confirmed unanimously by the United States Senate for that post. And last year, President Biden nominated Judge Jackson to serve on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, oftentimes referred to as our nation's second highest court. Yet again, she was confirmed by the U.S. Senate with bipartisan support. During the decade that she served as a federal judge, Jackson established a track record as a consensus builder, just like Justice Breyer. During the decade that she served as a federal judge, Judge Jackson has been even-handed, and she has been impartial. During the decade that she served as a federal judge, Judge Jackson has ruled for and against the government, in favor of prosecutors and for criminal defendants, and for both civil plaintiffs and defendants. As Judge Jackson told our colleagues in the Judiciary Committee recently, she said, and I quote her again, a duty to decide cases based solely on the law, without fear or favor, prejudice or passion. Judge Jackson is always guided by our Constitution. And it's why she received the support of judges nominated by Democrat and Republicans alike, by law enforcement and the civil rights community, and by Republicans and Democrats in this body on multiple occasions. Now, these past few weeks, I've heard some of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle use this confirmation process to mention the unfairness toward past nominees. Well, Mr. President, every one of these nominees, every nominee that they refer to, received a hearing and a vote. The same cannot be said of Merrick Garland, former Chief Justice of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, who was nominated by former President Obama to serve on the Supreme Court. Judge Garland did not receive a hearing. Judge Garland did not receive a vote because our colleagues on the other side of the aisle decided to invent a new rule. And most of them even refused to meet with Merrick Garland, one of the finest servants I've ever known. And this shameful blockade led to what many Americans, myself included, view as a stolen Supreme Court seat, a permanent stain on this body's reputation, and a reduction in the Supreme Court's credibility. Then 4 years later, our colleagues on the other side of the aisle broke their own precedent and invented yet another new rule to confirm a Supreme Court justice 8 days before Election Day, when tens of millions of ballots had already been cast. And while I will never forget this truly shameful behavior, this week we have a chance to move away from politics. We have a chance to place an extremely well-qualified nominee to the Supreme Court, and to do so with the support of senators from both sides of the aisle. In the end, the American people need to trust the Supreme Court to make decisions on questions that impact every single American. And whether we have access to clean air is one of those issues, whether we have access to clean water, whether we have access to good health care, whether women have the right to make their own health care decisions. We need a Supreme Court that stays above the political fray. We need a Supreme Court that calls balls and strikes, as Chief Justice Roberts once said. A Supreme Court that maintains the trust of the American people as the arbiter of a Constitution that protects the civil rights of all Americans. Judge Jackson will bring a breadth and a diversity of experience to the Supreme Court not often seen. Judge Jackson's resume, Harvard Law, clerked to three federal judges, including Justice Breyer, a public defender, U.S. Sentencing Commission vice chairman, federal district court judge, and federal circuit judge, is evidence that she is among the most qualified individuals in our country for this esteemed role. Her character and her intellect are beyond reproach. She weathered a grueling confirmation process with grace and dignity. Let me close, Mr. President, by noting that Judge Jackson's nomination is proof that today in America, one's qualification and unrelenting work ethic earn you your spot. That public service is valued and committed to the principle that protect our country do mean something, that the sacrifices of one generation slowly but surely make for a better America for the next generation. Mr. America, count me among the millions of Americans who are inspired by Judge Jackson's life story, a uniquely American story that provides proof that our nation can be made more perfect over time. And it brings this senator from Delaware, who grew up in Danville, the last capital of the Confederacy, in a much different America. It brings me great joy to be able to cast a vote to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to serve as an Associate Justice on the Supreme Court of the United States. And with that, I yield the floor.
Mr. President.
Senator from Vermont.
Thank you.
Bernie.
Mr. President, I look forward to offering two roll call votes on motions to instruct conferees to the so-called competitiveness bill based on the assurances given to me by the majority leader. I'm not quite sure when we're going to get to that, but I look forward to offering those two roll call votes. The first motion would instruct the conference committee not to provide $53 billion to the highly profitable microchip industry without protections for the American people. The second motion would instruct conferees not to provide a $10 billion bailout to Blue Origin, a space company owned by Jeff Bezos, the second wealthiest person in America, who is also the owner of Amazon. Amazon is a company which, in a given year, pays nothing, zero in federal income taxes, after making billions in profits. And by the way, in a given year, Mr. Bezos himself, one of the wealthiest people in the country, has paid nothing in federal income taxes, despite being worth nearly $200 billion. Let me be very clear. Mr. Bezos has enough money to buy a very beautiful $500 million yacht. Looks very nice to me. Not that I know much about yachts, but it does look very nice. Mr. Bezos has enough money to purchase a $23 million mansion with 25 bathrooms. Not quite sure you need 25 bathrooms, but that's not my business. And here is that mansion. So, no, count me in as somebody who does not think that the taxpayers of this country need to provide Mr. Bezos a $10 billion bailout to fuel his space hobby. When all is said and done, both of these motions The one on $53 billion for the microchip industry and the $10 billion for Mr. Bezos touch on an extremely important issue that is very rarely discussed in the corporate media or on the floor of the Senate. And that is how we proceed, how we go forward with industrial policy in this country. I should be very clear in saying I believe in industrial policy. I believe that it makes sense in certain occasions for the government and the private sector to work together in a mutually beneficial way to address a pressing need in America. Industrial policy, to me, means cooperation between the government and the private sector. Cooperation. It does not mean the government providing massive amounts of corporate welfare to extremely profitable corporations without getting anything in return. Here's your check. Do what you want. Have a nice day. In other words, will the U.S. government develop an industrial policy that benefits all of our society, or will we continue to have an industrial policy that benefits just the wealthy and the powerful? In 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, and I quote, "The problem is that we all too often have socialism for the rich and rugged free enterprise capitalism for the poor." I am afraid that what Dr. King said 54 years ago was not only accurate back then, it is even more accurate today. We hear a lot of talk around here about the need to create public-private partnerships, and that all sounds very good.
Well, I'm kind of focused on Ketanji Brown Jackson, but we've got a little bit of time left in the program. Again, we were $415 for fundraising. It would be nice if this evening wasn't a complete goose egg. But in the meantime, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, Robin, how are you?
Sorry you had to wait so long.
And I spent half my life waiting and the other half wondering why.
They also serve who stand and wait.
That's right. I'm sitting. You think I'm going to stand through all that?
Oh, okay. You can sit, too. I'm sure Keats would have been okay with that.
That was a good speech by Mr. Carper.
Carper, yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was born in Beckley.
Is it Chris?
Tom.
Tom. I'm sorry.
Chris Coons, Tom Carper.
Yeah, okay. He did a right nice speech. Well, when I talked to you briefly the other night, I guess Monday, I was remiss in something that I had meant to do, and I want to do it now. Because I thanked you profusely for the horn mug, but then later it dawned on me that somebody gifted me the mug, an unidentified horn family member.
Yes.
So whoever that is, I want to thank that person for their kindness. Because I think, you know, it's weird. Maybe I'm an old-fashioned fellow, but I always think that when someone does a kindness or something to you or for you, that a thank you is always appropriate.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why every program here starts with thank you.
I know. And I was just checking as I was listening to Bernie there for a second. And I want to make sure that I'm giving you the right information. According to our friends at Amazon, the package that's headed your way, winging its way toward you, was shipped, and it should arrive April 6th, between April 6th and April 8th.
The 6th is out.
Okay.
This being the 6th.
What day is the 8th? What day is today? Today's the 6th.
Yeah, the 8th is a Friday.
Well, it might have gotten there today, unless you were there checking. And it
no, it did not arrive today.
Well, fuck them. God damn it. If they would just spend more
there went all that goodwill right out the window
on prompt shipping, and speaking of shipping, I hope Tracy's listening because she almost got a surprise package that was meant for me. The other day, yesterday, I ordered two boxes of Nicorette, a box of number 6.5 envelopes, and some eye vitamins. And for some reason last night, a day after I had placed the order, I said, let me look on there and verify what I ordered so I don't go out and buy it in the store while I'm doing my buy. Well, it turns out the send to portion of the order self-populated to Tracy's house.
Oops.
Because I had just sent her something the other day, and I'm glad I caught it and canceled the order. Because she would be wondering, what the hell am I getting?
What am I doing with eye vitamins and nicotine gum?
Nicotine gum and envelopes.
You know, Scott, I don't know how much you I don't know how much you spend on the nicotine gum.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a chewing gum thing for you.
No, it's the nicotine.
Well, these pouches that helped me quit. You know, you can get them all the way down to like 2 milligrams per pouch.
Are they like snooze?
Yeah, but you can swallow. I mean, it doesn't make you sick. Now, sometimes it'll give you the hiccups. It triggers it, but that's the same thing with swallowing the nicotine gum. But these things are, I mean, I don't know what the tax situation is in California, but these things are infinitely cheaper than the gum and come in a much wider range of flavors.
What does Amazon carry them? Maybe I'll try some of those.
No, but I'll bet the gas station down the street, if you just want to take a walk, does.
Well, now that you had me standing before, now you got me walking.
Yeah, we got to see to your aerobic good health.
Yeah, that went out the window years ago.
With high button greaves.
Well, yeah, that too.
And but the there are brands like Zyn, Z-Y-N. And on ON, the lowest dosage in the Zen is 3 milligrams. The lowest dosage in the ON is 2. And I don't use them nearly as much as I used to. But every now and then, you know, it's kind of like, probably kind of like you with the gum. Just every now and then, you're kind of like, yeah, probably oughta. And, you know, you get, when these things go on sale here, I can get 20 pouches for a buck.
Damn. How long do they last? Just a half hour? Or?
Yeah, 20 minutes. I mean, you just pop it up there in the buccal cavity of your upper lip.
You just park it between your cheeks.
Cheek and gums, yeah. Oh, who was that? Former Dallas Cowboys player. Walt somebody. Garrison.
Yeah.
Oh, we grow old, we grow old. We shall wear the bottoms of our trousers rolled.
I, you know what I rediscovered the other night? I was flipping through YouTube because I always like the wide variety of weird content on YouTube. Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Oh, God. The old stuff?
The old stuff, yeah. I was laughing out loud.
Well, hell yeah.
The Peter Cook had such a tragic life, most of it self-induced, because he liked to tipple, as it were, you know.
Well, you know, there's tippling and then there's guzzling.
Well, he was a tippling, he was on the far side of tippling.
Yeah.
But those two were funny, and there are a couple of full-length documentaries about him on YouTube. For the younger generation out there who are not aware of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, they need to check some of that stuff out, because I like the understated British humor anyway, but that's not why I called.
Oh, no, but I did want to mention something to you, because I mentioned her to you at one point, and you said, oh, yeah, Natalie Wynn, she's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
ContraPoints?
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems like waiting for another video from her is like waiting for the second Boston album. But she posted a picture on Instagram yesterday of her done up in a Statue of Liberty costume.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's reason to think that there may be a new ContraPoints video dropping soon.
Well, I look forward to it. I haven't seen any lately, but I remember I went through a phase there where I couldn't get enough of Natalie.
Oh, I've watched them all, and they are all without fail brilliant. And the character she created, you know,
yeah.
Tabby the anti-fascist cat girl.
Did I turn you on?
Smash! No, you didn't.
Okay,
I just sort of randomly ran across her when I was looking for like YouTube trans content on over on Reddit, and I was like, oh yeah, and her analyses are so damn brilliant.
Oh yeah.
And she also just happens to be fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And breathtakingly beautiful.
It's what you call your winning combination.
Yeah, that's a triple threat. Brilliant, well, beautiful, and hilarious.
Well, you rang a bell for me. I guess it was on last night's show when you brought up David Icke or Icky.
Well, apparently it's Icke. I've been corrected so many times that I will never make that mistake again. But to my own credit, there is a... Remember Harold Icky?
Yeah.
That's why I assumed the pronunciation.
Well, here's the deal. Remember the old Sertz breath mint commercial?
It's two mints in one.
David Icke can be Icke, and he can be Icky. So there you go.
Well, apparently he played British football, which, of course, you know, we call it soccer. And I think there were head injuries along the way. That's my best guess.
Yeah, massive head injuries, irretrievably injured was his head. Yeah, that I have one of his books in the early 2000s. I don't know how I found him, probably on YouTube. And I said, this man is not to be believed. And I think he was talking about one of his books at the time. Let me get up. Get my little aerobics going here. Walk over to my old bookshelf. Bend over to the low shelf and see if I can find the title of that book. Well, no, it's not on this shelf. Damn it.
Lizard People and You?
No. Well, see, I'll have to move the boxes in front of the other bookshelf. But it's got a yellow cover. But in it, he's real big on symbols and symbolism and tying it into the great intergalactic reptilian shape-shifting conspiracy. He believes the entire royal family
are lizard people.
Is a bunch of lizard people.
But well, you know, I might take cards in that game.
But the reason we don't see the queen too often, according to David, is it takes...
She's molting!
No. It takes... Yeah, she rubs her nose against a rock and slides out of her own skin. But... Rome at 11. But...
It's the rubs her nose against the rock part that makes it art.
That's what snakes do.
I know!
And they're reptiles.
They certainly are. They're herpetiles or something, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't inquire as to their personal habits, but so he thinks that Queen Elizabeth, God bless her, is a shape shifting lizard person. But in this book, I wish I could lay hands on it now and heal it, but then flip through the pages.
You know, being a lizard person must be pretty cool. I mean, you know, being able to smell through your tongue and everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And flies. Don't worry about the flies. We won't weigh them.
Wait, it explains Mitch McConnell.
Well, there you go. He said, well, turtles are not reptiles. Well, turtles...
They're amphibians. Reptiles. Close enough.
Yeah. But, I need to... But the Columbia Pictures? Remember the old, when the Three Stooges would start, the lady with the torch?
Oh, yeah.
that apparently is a demonic symbol.
Well, of course it is.
Well, of course. Yeah. Anything having to do with it.
Has anybody ever seen David Icke and Hal Lindsey in the same room together?
I met Hal Lindsey. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. You lived to tell the tale.
He signed a book for me. When I first moved out here, I was still going to church. And I found this church, independent type, interdenominational church. And he was the guest speaker for several Sundays. And they wanted him to be the assistant pastor. He lives up in, what's the name of that place? It's like east of L.A. and a little south.
Lompoc? I don't know. I don't know anything about California geography. You're asking the wrong girl.
Well, this is why we're trying to get you out here for a visit, Robin. I mean, take the show on the road, for fuck's sake.
Well, you know, if I could save up enough money for, you know, some of that Jeff Bezos dick rocket money, I found a great plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills that I'd love to have do my face.
Yeah, back when I was into those things, we called them pocket rockets. But anyway, that's L-I-N-D-S-E-Y. Is that how he spells it?
I think he was an L-I-N-D-S-A-Y.
You know, he was a tugboat captain back when he was lost.
Now, you know, that's a bad thing to be, lost and a tugboat captain at the same time.
He did not win the Mark Twain Distinguished Service Award, I'll tell you that right now. Now, I was Googling him to see maybe if they said where he lived, and then I would remember it. You know, I don't know what's going on with me, Robin, and it frightens me a little bit. But my memory is not what it used to be.
Your hard drive needs defragging.
Well, how do I do that?
I hate to recommend hard drugs and alcohol, but they've always worked for me.
A purple micro dot hit of acid should do the trick. You'll look under your own hood.
Good God, he's still alive.
Oh, yeah, he's around.
He's an S-E-Y. Harold Lee Lindsey, born November 23rd, 1929.
Yeah, it was the day before Kennedy was shot, and some years before. I'm not saying there's a connection.
Late Great Planet Earth, 1971, and then basically just revised it every time it didn't come true.
This is how you know that the people are there for the taking. And I was one of them once upon a time, back in my Bible-thumping days. We all read Late Great Planet Earth, and about 4 years, 5 years later, I forget the title, but it was like, while you were waiting for what I described in the previous book to happen, here's another book with more shit.
After Late Great Planet Earth, he came along with the 1980s, Countdown to Armageddon.
Oh, yeah. How did you do? I didn't see that incandescent glow.
No, he wrote, the decade of the 1980s, this being prayer meeting Wednesday and all, the decade of the 1980s could very well be the last decade as we know it.
Well, it could have been. Apparently we weren't trying hard enough. Is there a list of his books in order like that? Because I would.
Oh, Lord, yes.
And how is it that the people didn't catch on to the scam?
Well, it was 1971 was Late Great Planet Earth. Then Satan is Alive and Well on Planet Earth, 1972.
He used to live in the apartment right above me.
The Late Great Planet Earth Songbook, 1972.
Oh, there's a happy time for all.
Liberation of Planet Earth, The Promise, Hal Lindsey's There's a New World Coming comic book, 1974.
Then a New World Only Breathing Heavy.
The Everlasting Hatred, The Roots of Jihad came along in 2002.
Oh, get on that
anti-Muslim thing.
Oh, yeah, beat that drum a while.
And then his last one was Faith for Earth's Final Hour, 2003.
Is that more comebacks than the student prince? Of Heidelberg, as I recall, or somewhere out there. But it just, I mean, Yeah, I mean, late great planet Earth, yeah, okay, I'll read it and get a kick out of it or whatever. But man, to go, now I was 71 when he wrote that. How many years has that been? 40 years, 42 years, 50 years? My math skills have gone straight to hell along with my memory. Well, I graduated in 72, so it's my 50th year anniversary. So yeah, it's been over 50 years. And what did Jesus say? Now, we both know that I am not the strongest believer in the world. I have to...
He said, a generation after me, not one stone of this place will be left upon another. And I think the destruction of the temple was 72 CE.
But didn't Jesus say not to try to forecast the time?
Yeah, behold, I come like a thief in the night.
Oh, there goes the silverware.
You know, you could have had a great career in radio, Scott.
I'll have to stash the sterling silver punch bowl with the little cups with the ornate handles and filigree or whatever it is around the rims. Jesus is coming like a thief. Margaret?
Oh, my God. He's still at it, though. Latest video, Hal Lindsey presents John Part 65. I thought it was only 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John in the Gospel of John. I didn't know about John 65. Hal Lindsey presents April 3rd, 2022.
Huh. Well, they kicked him off TBN, Trinity Broadcasting, because he was getting, I forget what the controversy was. I think he was really saying some unkind things about Muslim folks.
Oh, get this from today, Life News. Abortion clinic boxed up 115 aborted babies, sent them to incinerator to burn for power.
Yeah, how much wattage are you going to get? How many little babies?
The very question I asked, but I noticed that because I had a note earlier from Lady B, and this is a good time to share it. This is just sick and infuriating, Lady B said, and I don't blame you if you don't want to touch it, but these fuckers are clinically insane and absolutely must be stopped. Lauren Handy claims to have actually had 115 fetuses, and I had it in the stack, and I didn't, and Lady B, I was not ignoring you.
What was she using for bait? Did she have more experience?
Well, you know, it's kind of like catfish. You wet a little oatmeal and you wrap it around the hook, make a ball and fling it out there. And next thing you know, you're all, because, you know, fetuses love oatmeal. Lauren Handy says 110 of them were blessed and buried. The other 5 are with the police. Oh, no. They're dropping the dime.
The reunion tour coming up with the police there. They can't still be out for playing. So what was the purpose in saving the fetuses?
You know, you give them a burial because they're real babies, even though they're little wads of tissue.
But how, if you've got that many of them, what, they're not green stamps. You don't get...
You can't trade them in for a lava lamp.
Hell no. I tried. Ooh, wait a minute. I've said more than I wanted to. Jesus, I mean, and Lady
B. A priest came to Handy's apartment to name and bless the babies, holding a funeral mass before burying 110 of the fetuses in an unidentified private cemetery, probably otherwise known as Lauren Handy's backyard. The story they tell is that several of the activists, you know, fetus fetishists, including Lauren Handy, encountered a driver from Curtis Bay Medical Waste Services loading biohazard boxes into his truck outside the Washington Surgical Clinic in Foggy Bottom on March 25th. They say they convinced the driver to give them a box. A statement disputing the credibility of these claims, apparently from Curtis Bay Energy, was read by another reporter at the press conference. Curtis Bay Energy has not responded to voicemails asking for comment.
No, wait a minute. They picked the box. Now, they could have had what's behind the curtain that the lovely Carol Merrill is pointing at. I just don't know about these people. A box of fetuses. Madness.
Well, tiny box of blastocysts.
Randall Terry, a freak of long standing. He was offended, I tell you, offended, Scott. It's offensive that anyone would call into question their manners or their integrity for having these babies in the refrigerator.
I'm having a stroke. I don't know about these people. And there are
this is next level fetus fetish nuts. You know, Lady B said the crazies are taking over and we are letting them. They tried to overthrow our government and they're getting away with it. Putin is committing war crimes. We're letting him. Folks are going into debt or dying from COVID and we're letting them. And cops are still allowed to kill black men with impunity. I got fucking nothing, Robin. Take it easy and talk about puppies. I'm going to try to calm down my stomach. I know.
I remember Randall Terry. Now, there's a name that I haven't
Operation heard Rescue.
In Wichita, was it? Wichita, Kansas?
Oh, he was all over the place. I thought he was in Texas, but maybe that's just my bias.
Well, no, there was a time when they focused on Wichita.
But they broke him.
That place out.
Yeah, but they broke him. He was sued into oblivion.
Oh, good.
And Operation Rescue ceased to exist, so he had to find a new grift, and apparently it's this new gang of nut jobs.
Well, take a page out of that legal book and do that to Alex Jones, so we can finally... Bye, Mr. Jones!
Bye, Alex! See you later!
What would he do if he wasn't doing what he does now? I mean... Go back to selling cars or siding or...
Oh, Scott, he's got enough money, he'll never have to work again.
Yeah, but you know that type, that personality type. They've got to be up on...
Yeah, they come back like a bad penny.
You know, at least I had the decency to get out of radio, you know?
I think you never should have.
Well, I never say never. As a matter of fact, when my friend did my... reading about 6 or 8 months ago. He's a professional astrologer, and I know a lot of people poo-poo that stuff. But he said that the only thing keeping me from getting back into it is me. So take that for what it's worth. I mean, I can slip Q with the best of them.
Oh.
Well, them records in, baby. Come on. Well, I think we all need to get on the bus and go up and visit Hal somewhere in California. It ought to say where he lives.
It didn't. Oddly enough, his Wikipedia bio didn't say anything about where he lived.
Well, I can't remember.
Maybe in a van down by the river. I don't know.
Well, he needs to be down. Put him back on the tugboat and sink that fucker. Get! I'm sure you can get World War II surplus subs. Torpedo his. Send him in. How you want to meet Jesus? Well, Robin, I see I have frittered away the time. Here I was going to talk about substantial stuff, and what have I done?
Well, you don't just amateur fritter though. You fritter professionally.
Well, I like to think so from time to time, but I'm so uneven in my stuff. Some days I got it, and some days I ain't.
Well, you can bring your B game for quite a while and just ride on the majesty of the how Walt Disney really died joke.
Oh yeah, that. And I'm so glad that you keep getting a chuckle out of it.
Lie, you little wooden bastard, lie!
Normally you hear a line and you laugh, but it's never as good the second or third or fourth.
Oh, no, this just keeps on giving.
It's an evergreen. It's about Pinocchio. Evergreens are wood, ergo.
Well, there we go!
And what was the deal with Papa Geppetto? He wanted a real boy? Now, there's some kinkiness going on with that idea.
Well, I mean, all I can say is, Pinocchio, honey, you're valid. You're valid. You're a boy.
because, you know, and if you don't, if you're non-binary, you're valid too. Because, you know, wood.
Little Scott's liquid gold would do him a world of good. You know, my uncle died, had a terrible drinking problem, and he chugged half a bottle of Scott's liquid gold.
Oh, God.
It was a horrible end, but a lovely finish.
I knew it.
You knew
I was. I knew it was coming. Ah, oh, death, where is... Oh, death, where is thy sting? Oh, grave, where is thy victory? That was what Fields said when, because the old joke about the uncle who worked at the brewery and fell into the vat.
Yeah.
15 men jumped in to save him, and he fought them off bravely. Oh, death, where is thy sting? Ah, grave, where is thy victory?
Yes, indeed.
Oh. You know, it's moments like that that just kind of make everything all worthwhile. Terrible end, but a lovely finish.
I think that's a Richard Dawson line, as I recall.
Here's a headline you'll love.
Oh, baby, come on, hit me with it.
Number of spider species creeps up to 50,000.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go.
Yeah, I'm not going to sleep tonight.
You know, a couple of months ago, I was, the way my place is configured here, the mail slot is in the wall next to the front steps. And there's a thing on the inside of the apartment.
Don't you misgender me. There ain't no mail slot.
I don't even have to leave to get the mail because it goes down the chute and I open the flap next to the front door and there's my mail. Well, one day I went out because some magazines or something, circulars, were sticking out of the box because they wouldn't go down the chute. And I'm reaching down, and out of the corner of my left eye, I see a black thing with legs hanging off of its web. And I said, holy shit, it was a spider. I didn't get close enough to see if it had an hourglass anywhere on it, but it... I jumped.
You know, if you're down to asking a spider what time it is, you're in a really bad way.
But don't black widows have an hourglass?
Oh, yes, they do.
Freak me the fuck right out.
Yeah, time's up, motherfucker.
And I'm not afraid of them. I just don't want them on me.
Yeah, I don't want to live with them, and I hope they don't want to live with me. Okay, here's another headline. Let's see if you go to the same place I did in terms of a joke. Two Darwin notebooks missing for 20 years returned to UK library.
I got nothing.
Overdue fines will be monumental. Overdue fees are said to be crippling. Oh, well.
Somebody had a line that I didn't understand. Earther? Something about the Jerusalem chicken?
Oh, the Jerusalem chicken?
Run that by me once more. Maybe I'll get it.
The only kosher chicken you don't have to settle for. Settlers, occupied territories.
Oh, all right. Okay, I was trying to work it another way, and I was way off. Way off.
Settlements. Yeah. Not nearly as funny when you have to explain it.
That's what I ought to have tonight is chicken.
Well, pork chops here. Damn, those things are so good.
Those butterfly pork chops.
Yes, they are.
Do they flip from flower to flower?
It's hell chasing them down with a net, I promise you.
Oh, man.
See what I did there? Chasing them down with a net? Huh?
The elusive butterfly of love has struck me yet, baby. Don't be afraid. It will not harm you. It's only me pursuing something I'm not sure of. God, I love that song.
Scott, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
No, I want to have just a crappy evening.
No, damn it, I insist.
All right, well, if I must, I will. Robin, as always.
Oh, you didn't tell me if you've actually had coffee in your mug yet.
No, I haven't. I washed it, and it's in the dish rack. And out of habit, I just poured today's coffee in my Daffy Duck mug. But I'm going to start using it on the morrow.
You have to use it during the show.
Well, I hope to have coffee prior to the start of the show. Otherwise, I'll be a wreck.
And I'm... Wrecked him? Damn near killed him.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
You gotta but, honey, this one's eating my popcorn.
Call out them numbers.
See you, Scott.
All right, Robin. Take care. Take care, Horn family. And send a few bucks. You'll feel good. It's be a blessing.
Well, Arthur did make sure that it was not a goose egg day, so we got down to 408 bucks. So that means tomorrow we'll be at 708 bucks.
I know it's time to go, but between now and the start of tomorrow's program, people in the Horn family really look at what you get out of this show day after day, year after year. And I know the times are perilous and stupid and stuff.
When have they not been?
But and I'm not going to try to browbeat or guilt trip or anything, but if each of us does just a little, none of us have to do all that much.
Truth.
So, you know. Because I don't know what I would do if this show wasn't around.
No, you'd probably wind up watching Joe Rogan or something.
Oh, no. I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy. Play a bunch of old Hal Lindsey tapes. Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great. But seriously, it's a worthy enterprise, worthy of our time and worthy of our talents, our calls and our input and our support. So that's all I'll say about that.
Thank you, Scott. That's very kind.
Well, thank you, Robin. And you take care. Horn family, take care. And we'll do it again tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Thorn in the Side Thursday. All right. See you, Scott.
All right, Robin. Take care.
Bye now. And so we come to the end of yet another installment of the Horn. Thanks to each and every one of you. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. To each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. You know, I never did see. I didn't see Steve pop in. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy with me coming your way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first round of Malloy is, of course, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest folks I know. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Please stay safe. Get your second booster. Join the relatively tiny minority of people who have gotten both boosters. I'm still not among that number. I have to set my appointment up. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Maintain your social distance. 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, of course, if somebody with three names comes burbling at you, barking and grunting about how women belong to men, well, avoid that cue ball like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.